Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There is no better group of ones for flower power and forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. Today, I'm joined by a titan of global gardening. GardenX are the UK's Federation of Garden and Leisure Manufacturers. And with Brexit on the horizon, I'm joined by their Director General, Amanda Sizer-Barrett, MBE. My thanks to Sutton Seeds of Torquay, sponsors of this podcast. I had a really good weekend in the garden last weekend. It was a bit cold one day, but you know, when I step into my polytunnel, it's just like going to the south of France. I mean, it's fantastic. If you're like me, getting on in years, and the wind gets at you a bit, I'll tell you, you just need a cold greenhouse or a polytunnel to get in and out the wind. At the Grow South exhibition down near Chichester, I was interested to find that the Newey Group, that's a really big nursery group now, they've started what they call lean management and have collected up all of the new pots that are knocking about that haven't been used and are going to offer them for the trade. They've found literally tens of thousands. And if they can find likely buyer for some of these, it's going to save them tens of thousands and, of course, save a lot of waste. What's new this week? Well, the all-party report to MPs from the Arboricultural Society, Barley, the British Association of Landscape Industries, the Horticultural Trades Association and the Royal Horticultural Society, they've all made a presentation to the government worried about the vanishing gardens and landscapes which threaten the UK in the future. People tend to overlook the fact that horticulture in general is worth over $24 billion. I mean, it's an enormous sum of money. It employs quite a lot of people too. Something like 1.6% of the employed population are working in horticulture. We raise quite a lot of money in taxes for the government. But the general view is that we're overlooked. We don't have the support that we need. So I have my fingers crossed that this report might stir a few people in the Houses of Parliament and perhaps we'll get a bit more attention. A number of us are particularly worried about the arrangements that are made to train young people. Many of our horticultural colleges seem to have abandoned the training of young people for commercial horticulture, and yet there are some really good jobs. You know, if you like growing things, you can not only earn good money, but you have a job that really seems worthwhile and you very much like doing. This weekend, of course, it's the Remembrance Weekend. And in the paper on Saturday, we've got a picture from one of the Belgian memorial to the Great War. And the rose is there. You know, there's a rose bush planted alongside every headstone with some of those frightening serried ranks of gravestones. But the roses this year, as if they knew it was the centenary, seem to be flowering their heart out. A really rich red variety called Remembrance has done sterling work. Must be the fourth or fifth flush, I should think. But with high summer temperatures and then some late summer rain, they're really flowering as they've never flowered before. We've also got, of course, the new rose, Lest We Forget. And the sales of that will help the memorial to the Bomber Command up near Lincoln. Out in the garden, It's the new autumn season, so to speak, and if you've got green tomatoes, no point leaving those in greenhouses or outside. They'll just get frozen. So pick them, you know, cut the whole truss off so that you've got the stems and the fruit. Put them in trays, bring them into the warm, and they'll slowly ripen. With luck, we'll give you fruit right through to Christmas. If you're in a hurry and you want to speed up the ripening, well then, ethylene gas does just that. And it's given off by overripe fruit, particularly bananas and apples. And so in your tray of green tomatoes, just make sure that there's an overripe banana or fairly close to the fruit bowl so it gets that ethylene. Ethylene will also encourage the bromeliads to flower. So if you've grown a pineapple from a green top, and they're fairly easy to root, although they make quite big houseplants, but if you want that to fruit a bit more quickly, or flower and fruit, then ethylene gas will trigger the flowering. There is a downside, of course, to the ethylene from ripening fruit. Don't let it get near tulip bulbs. I'm afraid it damages the flowering. So there's one or two tips for the green tomatoes. Keep on with the tidying. Now that the clocks have altered and we don't have daylight hours in the evening, I'm afraid it's weekends to maintain all of those little tidying jobs that are absolutely essential. I've got two compost bins on the go, one for leaves and the other one, of course, for all the green debris. The leaves need a quite different treatment. They rot down into leaf mould due to the effect of fungi. If you keep them just wet, that's all the fungi needs to rot the leaves down. Compost, on the other hand, all the green waste, that needs temperature. And I always advise, if you can get two or three bins of lawn mowings and put that in the bottom of the heap, that really warms up very quickly and gets the whole heap rotting down. As the temperature drops, so the speed of rotting, I'm afraid, will slow down. And very shortly, it will be February, March, before we can shake the heaps up, get some air into them, and getting them rotting down again.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
My guest today is Amanda Sizer Barrett of Garden X. Now, I've known Amanda for quite a few years. Lovely young lady, but has more experience probably in exporting gardening things than anyone. How are you today, Amanda?
I'm very well, thank you, and even better for hearing that I'm described as a lovely young lady. So I've been in this industry for far too long. But thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Could you first of all outline why Garden X was formed and what it does?
Yeah, Absolutely. Yes, well, it was actually formed in 1961. It's a not-for-profit trade association. So its role is to help British suppliers with their business interests. And it was actually set up as a result of a group of companies going, I think it was to the Netherlands, and winning a prize for the exhibit at this exhibition. And they decided, instead of dividing the money between them, they were going to actually use it to try and take advantage of the interest in sales that had been shown at the exhibition. And as a result of that foresight, GardenX was born. And since 1961, it's been promoting, lobbying, and supporting British companies to export around the world.
I mean, it would be fair to say that some of our brands have really good international reputation, don't they? The Brits.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yes. I mean, we are lucky, and certainly it makes my job easier, because Britain is known as the home of hobby gardening, and it's respected by gardening enthusiasts around the world for our company's expertise and our innovation.
Yeah, and usually we'll meet at European trade shows. But, of course, you work internationally.
Yes, we do, yes. This last year we've taken part either with information stands or by visiting or by taking British groups to shows all over the world. We've often worked in countries such as Japan, as well as USA. We've gone as far afield as Australia in the past. And we also have a very wide range of exhibitions that we visit or are represented at within Europe itself, as you say. It's incredible, really, how many different countries do have very good national exhibitions. And it's one way of trying to get that British name and the British gardening expertise shown to buyers who are visiting from across the world.
And how would that work? I mean, if we talk about a trade show like the one at Essen in Germany, if I go there, there'll be 6 or 10 UK manufacturers on a group together. Do you sort of organise that?
We do, yes. It's quite an involved process. It's something that we've been doing for years, and it starts quite early on with trying to get cash grants for smaller suppliers or newer exporters to help them with their participation. And for that, we have to lobby government. It was an interesting process. We're usually reasonably successful because we've got a track record of success there. Once we've actually put our bidding process in, and it's just we've just gone through that this year, in fact, for the next financial year, we then secure space from the organisers, market the event to appropriate suppliers, and then there's a whole process of support and help just to make life easier for those exporters who are going to attend that show. And you're right, IPM in Essen is one of those. And we do everything, really. We do press releases, multilingual previews. We drum up support from the British embassies and consulates over there as well. We try and give information about the market and even potential distributors and buyers' names to our exhibitor groups. And then we have a stand there as well, so we're there throughout the show to support them. And then we support the suppliers afterwards by getting cash grants to them if they're eligible, but also by helping them with all their follow-up, so the leads that they take at the show aren't wasted.
If I was a nurseryman as opposed to a manufacturer, are there opportunities for me too?
There are, actually, yes. We don't have as many growers taking up the opportunities as suppliers. IPM is slightly different. We do have some companies who go there. David Austin Roses, for instance, has been a long-term exhibitor there, and there are others. But growers in the UK have a particular challenge, as I know you know. They obviously have... it's more difficult for them to export. They don't know what their production is going to be. If they've got enough production in the UK, then they may consider it's not worth the financial risk or the extra work and resource to begin to export. But my view is that there are a lot of opportunities there for horticultural growers to actually export around the world, and we'd love to help them.
Yes, because you mentioned Raymond Everson on the Channel Islands,
yes.
A leading international clematis breeder, his young plants would be fairly easy to transport.
Well, they would, and in fact, he actually does very well indeed. He's one of the IPM exhibitors and is renowned, obviously, for his range, and is a very successful exporter and a credit to the growing industry.
And if I was a manufacturer, it's always been my feeling that you really need a representative in the home country. So if I was going to export spades or whatever it was to the States, if I had a partner who was a local national, that would help.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it makes a big difference. One of our tasks and one of the things that we offer to companies is to try and point them in the direction of the appropriate distributor for their needs. And obviously it varies depending on the product sector. So our research department is superb at trying to match companies and potential distributors in whichever market they're targeting. The other thing, of course, that helps is mail order catalogues. It's very easy for a British supplier to begin exporting by finding a reputable gardening catalogue in wherever market they want to choose. Germany has got some very strong ones, and it's a really good way to start exporting. So it depends on the product range, and we try and match companies to the type of buyer that works best for them.
Now at home, the internet and online trading is having quite a dramatic effect. Will we as UK manufacturers and growers be able to work direct with the consumer at some stage?
Well, it's a tricky one. Different companies have different views on it. And obviously, commercially, it can be challenging to keep your traditional avenues of sale open while also embracing online and e-tailing. There are a lot of e-tailers internationally as well who are starting up, who are doing very well. We do find that suppliers find their own way through this, but consumers are definitely using, especially younger consumers, are using online to purchase more. But of course, this is a real challenge for the amazing garden centres and outlets we've got in the UK who provide knowledge. And I think the knowledge is the differential, really, that still provides that USP of a ground retailer rather than an online one.
I love that word, e-tailing. That's a new one for me. But then I am an old greyhead, and not really.
It's a bit of jargon for me. I don't tend to use it, but yeah, that's what it's known as internationally now.
Yeah. And Amanda, what about Brexit? Dare I mention that to you?
Yes, well, you can imagine I've gone greyer since Brexit reared its head. To a certain extent, it's an opportunity for us as an association, and we can't fail to recognise that. Our job is obviously to help companies with their exports, and they will need more and more help as the deadline of the 29th of March arrives, especially if a deal is not reached. It is causing some hiatus in the UK market, which is a great shame. I don't think any supplier is going to admit anything other than a little bit of hesitation over spending on innovation or perhaps taking on new staff or buying new machinery at the moment. But what we're doing is we're trying to be very pragmatic. We're trying to gather together all the information that we can about the potential work and changes that companies will need to make in the different scenarios, and then to try and supply as much of that in a really easy to digest, simple way so that they can be prepared and it doesn't actually cause stasis in their own sales, which of course is a danger. It is frustrating. A huge amount of government time and effort is being redirected towards Brexit instead of perhaps looking at what happens beyond that and the opportunities that may exist further afield in the long-term future. Whichever way you voted, I think that everyone is aware that there are opportunities out there in the world and certainly for the gardening industry. So we really want to get past this and then really help companies, even if it means advising them on the customer's procedures, etc., that we haven't had for 40 plus years.
Yeah. I mean, my feeling is that everybody will muddle through. I can't think that the Dutch, for example, will want to stop exporting plants to us, or the Germans' cars, or the French their wine. The politicians are all sort of shuffling about, aren't they, trying to protect their own backs. But in practice, commerce will find its answers, won't it?
Well, to be honest, Peter, I couldn't agree with you more. I think you've summed it up perfectly. We've got as many companies who are actually importing into the garden centres and DIY stores, etc., in the UK, and it goes for every sector. So it will happen, but I think it's a shame that it's just caused this hiatus in expansion, which I think could well take place. But we'll be very glad when we've got it out of the way and we can actually just get on. British companies have exported around the world. You know, in 1961 there was no European market, common market, and therefore we will do so again. It just will mean adapting, and I think British companies are very good at that. We're quite entrepreneurial and we're quite stubborn as well. So I think we'll make it through.
I remember when I first started in this business, we needed quotas to import bulbs from Holland. That was in the early 1950s, and it was remarkable how various things were done to ensure that if somebody here wanted to buy bulbs, that the Dutch supplier had the quota and, of course, the money, because there was a control on the amount of money you could spend abroad. It's so much freer now, isn't it? We all travel so much more easily. We're really international, all of us.
It's true. And I mean, I wasn't aware of that. And it just shows you that companies will trade, and we are a trading nation. But you are right. I mean, when we go to trade shows now, and you go to IPM and you've been to GAFA and I go to the same shows, it is extraordinary how many buyers that we meet from across the world. We saw so many South American countries represented at this year's GAFA. It's a truly international market, and it's a small place. We all need to trade. We all need to find new markets, and it will continue. It's just really trying to. I think a lot of companies just want to get on with it, get it out of the way, and get on with it.
And I certainly want to get it out of the way and to get on with it. Amanda, it's great speaking to you today. If there is somebody listening, and we have listeners around the world, fortunately, and they want help, either importing or exporting, I suppose, but particularly those at home wanting to or thinking about exporting, what would they do?
Well, we would say, obviously, that we would welcome their call. What we'd do is talk through with them their export ambitions and also their priorities. We always do an initial interview and meeting to find out what capability a company has, and then we'll harness our advice accordingly. And if they get in touch with us direct, or they look on our new website, which is www.gardenex.com, they'll find a lot of information there. And our team here at the White House in Braisted in Kent, the Garden of England, will be very happy to help them. So we look forward to assisting any company that's got international ambitions, because it's a wasted opportunity if they don't try exporting.
Not half. And what does it cost?
The membership depends. It depends on the turnover of the company. So for a small company, we have a small membership subscription of a couple of hundred quid to start them off, to get them on the export route. And it's around £600-700 for a larger company. So for that, they will get access to all our research, all our buying contacts, our advice, the cash grants, and just really any export advice just at the other end of the phone.
Amanda, it's great to speak to you. Look forward to seeing you at Essen, if not before.
I look forward to it. And I have to say, Peter, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for your dedication and support for the UK gardening sector. It's always valued, and you are an absolute expert in your field.
Now I'm blushing. Thanks, Amanda.
Okay, thank you, Peter.
I'm just back from the Dutch trade fairs in Aalsmeer near Schiphol. And goodness, there was masses to see. I need to just spend a weekend thinking about what there was, and we'll get a full report to you next week. Earlier in the week, I went to a talk by Margaret Thrower, the daughter of Percy Thrower, the true celebrity when it came to gardening. And Margaret was talking about three generations of gardening, her own experiences, that of her dad, and of her grandfathers. One of her grandfathers on her mother's side, Charles Cook, was head gardener at the Royal Estate in Windsor, and she told a remarkable story, one that I hadn't heard before. Apparently, when Mrs. Simpson arrived on the scene, she went into the peach and nectarine houses when they were in full flower and was so charmed by them, broke off branches and took them to decorate her bedroom. Now, I can tell you, if you were the royal head gardener with, acre and acre of greenhouses, and you had 500 or 600 men all working, training, for example, peaches and nectarines, beautifully fanned, ready to crop in the autumn, and somebody came out and broke the branches off in flower, you would be apoplectic, as I understand Charles was. But fortunately, the late Queen Mary came in and saved the day. She understood what was going on and suggested that he moved to Sandringham, and he became head gardener there. Thanks again to Sutton Seeds of Torquay, sponsors of this podcast. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.